Welcome to No Filter Sports. It is November
7th.
7th.
Mickey Mantle's number.
2019. I got a lot for you today. Eli's Aaron along with Denny McClain and Bob Page. Alan Trammell will be our guest. Very excited to talk to Tram. Here's a guy.
Why are you so excited to talk
to him? Because Bob and I were there, or I don't know whether he was there that day. The day they showed up at spring training after Ralph Houk hyped them for 2 years as the Tigers were going through 100 lost seasons and how good it was going to be. They were scrawny is probably the wrong word. They weighed 150 pounds.
I know.
I thought I was going to see Canseco and McGuire there, these two titans. And instead, there's two little skinny guys. It's a complete combination.
They really were, weren't they?
Yeah.
They really were two little skinny guys.
And I tell you, what a brilliant move by Jim Campbell. Jim Campbell told Hoot Evers, the farm director, I want you to move Lou to second base because we got these two guys. And Evers says, no, I'm not going to do that. And Campbell says, well, you won't work for us anymore if you don't. You move Lou to second base.
Well, and, you know, one of the reasons I think that he wanted to keep him at third was everybody says that Lou Whitaker had the greatest second base arm ever. So because he did have such a great arm, put him at third. He's going to field the ground balls anyway. And with that Aurelio Rodriguez-like cannon, I'm just saying that's probably what their thinking was, what Evers' thinking was.
What does that mean, that he's got the greatest arm they've ever seen from second base? What does that mean?
Because he's a,
What do you think it means?
He throws hard.
He throws hard?
Yeah, okay.
Should have been a pitcher.
Meanwhile, I got to apologize because if my voice isn't as clean and crisp and mellifluous as
it's never clean and crisp.
Mrs. Jarrett, how did Eli get that voice?
And she goes,
What voice are you talking about?
They said, how did his voice get that way? And she said, what way? So that's what moms do. But so I go and get a flu shot. And I haven't got one for 10 years because I don't get the flu often. And the last time I got the flu shot, it gave me the flu. So at least for a couple of days. So I'd get the flu shot yesterday. And now I felt awful for the last 24 hours. It's like, why get it if it gives you the flu? The other thing I got, I'd never even heard of this. I got the shingles shot.
Oh,
you know what shingles is?
Yeah, it's not nice.
I've never. It's a big blisters. I've never seen anybody with big blisters on.
Like hell, yeah.
Apparently,
yeah.
I got to get it. So I got.
And then you were feeling poorly before that. And all I have to tell you is what my buddy here in New York City, Danny Leberfeld, told me a few years ago. He said, "Bob, I suppose you know my people are very sick people." I said, "Oh, believe me, I know, Danny." And that's all I'm going to say about that,
what
Eli. Now continue.
What people are you talking about?
His name was Dan Leberfeld. Okay, what people do you think he was?
You know, you are just a closet racist.
God,
anyway, and the last thing before we go, so much about the Lions, the Wings, and all that, and Bob was at the Wings game last night in New York, is this chicken sandwich. They're killing each other over a chicken sandwich. I mean, Popeyes comes out with this chicken sandwich for the first time. It's just taking the country by storm. They blew through their inventory of chicken fillets a month ahead of schedule. And the other night, a chicken sandwich in development for two years. Can you imagine this? Wall Street Journal says 2 years they went to develop this sandwich. And so south of in Maryland the other night, they're in line and a guy cuts in line. They're lined up out, all out in the street for this. By the way, they still are because they reinstituted it again the other day. And so somebody texting or on their social media said, what's all the traffic about? Oh, it's the chicken sandwiches back. A guy named Kevin Davis was stabbed because he cut into line to get the chicken sandwich. And the guy argued with him, brought him outside and stabbed him to death. And he's still at large.
So he cut in front of a guy and he got stabbed.
This is why.
Are we still doing a sports show, or are we doing a news show?
No, this is the police
blatter. What does this have to do with sports?
I just want
to
say that I always bring my knife to fast food restaurants in case somebody cuts in line and deserves to die. Okay, we can move on. I was just taken aback by it.
What would our mutual hero say now, Eli, at this juncture of the program? He would say, and now, back to the sports scene.
What is the difference of a chicken? A chicken is a chicken.
Well, apparently it's very special. It was in development for 2 years. The buttermilk batter and the sour pickles and the buttered brioche buns. It's a chicken sandwich.
Oh, boy.
And the thing that's great about that sandwich, of course, is that you do actually get to eat two-thirds of it, which goes to your stomach. The other third just stops right at your arteries, and it stays there.
Oh, Bob, it's only 44 grams of fat.
deep fried.
Bob, there are a certain percentage of people that care about that type of stuff, but most people don't. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And if you get a French
fry. You're right about that, Denny, and that's why we have this tremendous obesity in America today. You're totally right. Most people don't care about eating healthy. They don't care about their diets. And if they're 50 or 100 or 200 pounds overweight, they don't care.
Well, Bob, if I knew I was going to live to be 75, for God's sakes, I'd have never eaten my first piece of chicken.
I thought you were going to steal the line from your former teammate, Norm Cash, one of the greatest lines ever. And he said at his Texas draw, hell, if I'd have known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself.
More or less, that's exactly what I said.
Yeah. Mickey Mantle said
I said
too.
I wouldn't have had a piece of chicken had I known that.
Anyway, so the Lions, this is very
Lions, my Lions.
This is very interesting. As they go into Chicago, as 2.5
What could be interesting about the FLs at Chicago against the 3-5 Bears?
We are going to tell you.
Well, you're right. There's not a lot interesting about it, but I think it's worth talking about briefly.
I do too.
All right. Mitch Trubisky has a quarterback rating of 34.8. And the other day or yesterday, he said, we got to turn the TVs off at Hallis Hall because they're listening to all the pundits on television saying how awful the Bears are.
Can somebody be that thin-skinned in the NFL?
I guess so.
They get knocked on their ass every time they go out to play a football game, whether it's in practice or otherwise. And this guy's complaining about people speaking on television, doing their job during the sports segments.
Well, I guess he's gotten a little bit sensitive. And what's interesting is that the Lions, whose defense is just atrocious, have been allowing a quarterback rating of over 100. So you just wonder whether Trubisky will suddenly come alive, and they must think he is because they're favored.
Well, let me run something by you. The coach is not – listen, I think Patricia's a pretty smart guy.
Yeah.
And he made a couple of statements which tells you how smart he is. He called Trubisky a great player. If I was playing the Chicago Bears this week, I'd call him a great player too. I'd let it.
He was talking about North Carolina State. Danny.
No, he wasn't. and I would be blowing smoke up his butt too, just in order to get him into better mood to think that he really is a great player. And
all
then
right,
go out
the,
and
the
score 40 points against them.
Well, what's that
in my mind, here's the one thing that's really interesting about this matchup. As all of you regular listeners know, Dennis Dale Plain, the Chicago native, constantly refers to the FLs as we. But his team is really the Chicago Bears. Denny, for whom are you rooting Sunday?
The Bears.
that's perfectly fine. Meanwhile, the reason they think Trubisky...
I'm going to take the points.
with his 34.8 passer rating, jeez, he's going up against the Lions defense. You ready for this? 31st in total defense. There's only 32 teams. 30th in pass defense. 27th in rush defense. 27th in scoring defense. So the prediction is that Mitch Trubisky will come alive.
I want to know how an NFL quarterback can only produce 9 yards in a complete half.
That is amazing. I know.
It is. It's impossible. It's almost impossible.
They've lost 4 straight games. Well, the Lions have only lost 4 out of 5, and the only one they won there was against the Giants. So I guess they figure 2 really losing teams. They've lost, let's see, so combined they've lost 8 of their last 9. And that the home team will win. But anyway, enough of that.
Bottom line here? Eli, what's the bottom line on this game?
There is no bottom line. It doesn't matter because they're both out of the race.
The bottom line on this game is this. The Chicago Bears and any other NFL team, if you are struggling, you welcome a visit from the FLs.
Yes.
That's the bottom line on this game.
But you know what's hard to believe? This guy threw for 3,200 yards last year, 24 touchdowns. What the hell happened? I know he got hurt. That I know.
Yeah.
But is he just trying to protect himself so much that he can't play?
You know, I'm not in Chicago. I don't know what the psychiatrists are saying about him, but he was the number 2 pick in 2017, and the expectations, let's say, were a lot higher. Well, I guess you know the Giants at the Jets is another big game this week. I'm sure you're
bracing. It's not anymore. It's not anymore. I'll tell you that much. What a joke! I will be watching, obviously, but what a joke that turned out to be.
You know, when Drew texts me and something's funny, instead of saying LOL, he goes ha 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 like 20 times in a row. So I got Giants at Jets. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some college.
But wait a second.
Football.
I got one more thing. Wait a minute.
Hold it.
I got one more thing about this, about the Bears and Trubisky. There's a bookmaker giving back all of the money if you bet on Trubisky for a Most Valuable Player award this year because the odds were so good at one time. Mm-hmm. So he's giving back them all of their money if they bet on this guy to be the MVP. So, you know, somebody's got a big heart out there. You know why he says he does it? Because they'll take the money and bet it on somebody else.
That's right. That's right. Eventually get it back. I think we should talk about the Wings, because you went to the game last night.
Sure. Well, I got a lot more football. We'll come back to it later on in the show.
And
that's
the Dylan Larkin soundbite.
Michigan State plays Illinois. You're not excited about that?
Oh, I guess we
And East Lansing Saturday afternoon? Well, you're not excited about that game?
I'm kind of surprised that the Spartans are 15-point favorites in that game.
15?
Yeah.
How can that be?
I don't. Are you serious?
I'm pretty sure.
Why?
Brandon, look it
Why?
Up. Brandon, look it up.
Poor it can't be 15.
Illinois beat Wisconsin, for goodness sake. Wisconsin shut out Michigan State 38-0, albeit in Madison.
And Illinois, right, beat Wisconsin and fared quite
well. I just said that. Yeah.
I know, and fared quite well against Michigan.
And again, to quote our mutual hero, when you're looking at Michigan State hosting Illinois, the less said, the better.
What do you? I think they're 15-point favorites. 14, okay.
I don't believe that either.
I don't either.
Fellas, the game of the year so far in college football is at the same time, 3:30 Saturday afternoon, and that would be number 2 LSU at number 1 Alabama. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think that I, of all people, would possibly decide, and this is almost unthinkable, that I may watch that game instead of a Michigan State game? You're damn right you'd be right in thinking that.
Yeah, that's
I wouldn't be alone among MSU alumni either. That's how bad it is.
Well,
been.
It's also interesting that you mentioned the college football thing, because the other night during the basketball game, in between the Duke game and the Michigan State game,
I was there.
This insane half-hour show on the top 25 college rankings. Yeah, yeah. It went on forever, and it could have been a 15-second story. Here's the top 25. The first, bowl championship, whatever they call it, the bowl championship or the Final Four, whatever. Because the only interesting thing about it is that Clemson is number 5. Yep. They have not lost.
Right.
They've got the longest winning streak, I think, in America.
And they're beating the hell out of everybody.
Right. Right. They've got a 24-game winning streak. Nobody's hurt.
Right.
They've outscored their opponents 160-31 the last 4 or 5 games. Yep. Trevor Lawrence, their stars, and thrown an interception. So there's a little bit of a question
that's
mark.
A big, now, that's a big piece on Clemson, I think I saw somewhere recently. They said Clemson University is the single most Christian university among public institutions, or is a private school in the United States. So here's what I think. I think old Dabo better get down on his knees and start praying to Jesus he gets into that Final Four right there, because right now it don't look good.
Well, I was told, and I can't reveal the source, that in this huge pay-for-play, which is really what's been going on in college sports for a long time beneath the surface. And by the way, when we talk about the basketball games of the night, Bill Self of Kansas is really under the gun, could be suspended for a year for their pay-for-play stuff. But I was told that Clemson, with this heavily Christian angle to their whole program.
Culture.
That they donate they donate huge amounts of money to the local churches that then give them to the players, that then pay the players the 100 grand.
that would be very unchristian.
And every school's got its own way of doing it. Most of them have their own way of funneling money to the players, whether it's through Adidas or the shoe companies or whatever. The players are getting paid.
But who wouldn't buy that? I mean, I would buy it. I would think it's true. Would you?
It's true.
One way or the other. Listen, when you play this kind of football, LSU, Clemson, Alabama, somebody's getting a paycheck.
Absolutely. I mean, the Cam Newton thing where he
can't sit up there in Detroit, Michigan, and throw stones like that and leave Michigan, Michigan State, and everybody else up here, Ohio State, unscathed. Well,
No.
They just haven't been called on the carpet like these other schools, like Patino and Louisville and the others have.
I've spent a lot of time in Louisiana, a lot of time. It's kind of a state off the wall. They're unto themselves totally with whatever they do. And if you ever get a guy mad there that's a real guy from Louisiana, you will wind up with the alligators there over a weekend. And I'm going to tell you, they march to a different drummer. They got different kinds of drums that they want to hit people with. But let me make a point. The point I'm making, football, basketball, doesn't make any difference. You just got to make sure whatever team you're pulling for on the weekend, whether it's high school or college, is guaranteed by the local sheriff. Because if you're betting against the sheriff, you're going to get shot. I spent 5 years there.
Well, let's not get away from what we're talking about with the basketball, like Bill Self in Kansas. They're up for three level one, which are the most serious allegations by the NCAA. It's all related to that FBI corruption thing that took down Pitino, but a former Adidas consultant funneled money to the mom of former KU player Billy Preston. Not that Billy Preston. Will it go around in circles? But and also the guardian of another player. So this is just what goes on. Okay, they through the shoe companies or whatever, however they do it in football or basketball, the players get paid.
And every once in a while, somebody's got to be punished just to make a point.
Yeah.
Now, anyway, fellas, as I said, I wanted to mention this. This is a shocking development in college football, specifically in the Big 13 plus Rutgers. Do you know about this? Undefeated Penn State, number 5 in the nation, with no business in the conference, of course. They go to Minneapolis Saturday to play undefeated Minnesota. Minnesota, along with Penn State, 8-0, mm-hmm. undefeated, both atop the Big 13 plus Rutgers West. Now, after kicking ass and taking names at Western Michigan, P.J. Fleck is doing the same thing at Minnesota. In a bizarre development, which Eli, you brought up on the last show, Florida State just fired head coach Willie Taggart. Bobby Stoops is about to enter, the great Oklahoma coach, one of the very best football coaches of the country. After he retired at Oklahoma, he then waited just about a year and a half and bizarrely accepted the job as head coach and general manager of the Dallas Renegades in the XFL. So obviously Florida State's coming after Bobby Stoops, and he agrees to go. Within 24 hours this past week, Bobby Stoops suddenly withdraws his name. So where would embarrassed FSU officials then turn? Obvious, P.J. Fleck. So Minnesota officials blanch, and they quickly offer Fleck a contract extension to say. Now, if you get a chance, you know, to go to Florida when you live in Minnesota, that's one thing. But maybe this. Maybe think about this with Bobby Stoops. Maybe he's waiting for a particular job. He is an Ohio native, and he just turned 59 a month ago. Maybe he's waiting to see what happens in East Lansing, Michigan.
He was also rumored with the fallacious Harbaugh's leaving as being a perfect coach to take over for Michigan if Harbaugh goes. Anyway, I want to talk more about college basketball. There's some stuff there. I want to hear from Dylan Larkin. But first, I want to tell you that great eyesight is a lifestyle gift. We all seek it. We want it. We make sacrifices to try and get it. Nothing like seeing well, and nothing as bad as not being able to see well. And the only way to have 20/20 near and far vision for life without glasses and contacts is safe, reliable, state-of-the-art procedures from the Yaldo Eye Center, Michigan's premier eye clinic. Many Red Shovel listeners have gone there, up to 100 at this point. And the reason why is because Dr. Yaldo is the best. He'll check out he'll let you know what your unique needs are, get the procedure that sets you free. And so the evaluation is free also, whether it's custom LASIK, whether it's multifocal lens exchange, no matter what, get rid of those reading glasses, get rid of those glasses and contacts. The evaluation is free. Only thing you stand to lose are your contacts and glasses. Get the best and pay the least. He'll beat any competing offer you may have gotten. The number is 800-398-EYES, 800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
And now our good friends at Hall Financial. Hall Financial has received nearly 800 five-star reviews from their happy clients. And they're on a mission to hit 1,000 in 2019. David's team of mortgage pros gives every client VIP service, ensuring that they feel like a name and not a number. Hall Financial will walk you through the process of buying your home and provide you with a top realtor in your area. Who wouldn't want that type of service? Hall will cater to your schedule day or night and on weekends. They work for you. And you won't be charged hidden or extra fees either. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall Financial. Call them today at 248-308-5000 if you're looking to purchase or refi. Or chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. Equal housing lender, NMLS number 1467435. David Hall, 248-308-5000.
And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, back to college basketball here briefly. It was freshman Tyrese Maxey for John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats. Hit a three from behind the line to make it 65-60 with 59 seconds left, and Kentucky beats Michigan State. Sloppy game, 69-62. They'll lose their number one ranking. Early in the season, though, Tom Izzo was upset. But, you know, to play matchups that serious or severe early in the season, it's going to happen. I don't think anybody's assuming that either Michigan State is not going to be in the battle all year long, or that you can read anything into that, because I thought both games were pretty sloppy the other
night. Why do you think he does that? Why do you think he takes on the biggest and best
teams? I'll answer that. Yeah. Because he feels that playing and almost always losing these games against the top powers early in the season makes the team a lot tougher and makes them realize just how good they're going to have to be and what they're going to have to do to get where they want to go. But I'm telling you, I'm sitting at the Garden the other night for that doubleheader, and I'm looking at Kentucky's schedule, coming up here. They're playing, as Al McGuire used to say, the little sisters of the poor. Yeah. So not everybody shares Tom's philosophy. And you talk about Maxey, the rich get richer all the time. This is a five-star kid whom everybody in the country wanted. We go into the season and we hear that Cassius Winston is ranked the number one player in all of college basketball by virtually every survey. He was not the number one player on the floor at Madison Square Garden.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. That's what I was going to ask. I mean, they made such a big deal about this. And the kid's a great player. Don't misunderstand me. He's a very, very good player.
Winston, hell yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think he's the best player in the country, not based upon what we even saw at the end of the season in the playoffs last year.
You see those, for all of you, and I know a lot of you did watch that doubleheader on ESPN the other night. My God, the talent level on some of these teams is just unbelievable. And it would be very difficult to say that Michigan State is the number one team in the country, and I felt that coming in, and now they're not. I mean, it's almost like they were so bad at times that they might have been the first team, they won't be, but they might have been the first team in college basketball history to go from preseason number one to out of the top 10 after the opening game.
That's okay. And as far as Winston goes, he's very smooth. He's kind of good player. He's kind of an understated player. He's not spectacular in the way he plays, but the way he manages the game, I think it's pretty remarkable.
And I'll tell you what, gave the other team a nice backhanded compliment. He says that that was the other best team in the country. I think we're right there with them. If we get better and smarter as a team, I think everything is there to be a winner.
And you know what, fellas? I mean, if you talk about, again, Cassius Winston not being the number one player on the floor, he wasn't the number one basketball player named Cassius in those four games. Number one guy there was Cassius Stanley, another monster athletic five-star recruit that left Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, duking it out to get him. I mean, that's why you have to respect Izzo and his staff. I was talking to MSU assistant Mike Garland after the game. And, Vernon Carey Jr., the great Duke freshman, came right down to Michigan State and Duke, and he finally chose Duke. So Michigan State is always behind the eight ball recruiting these types of kids. They don't get them that often, and they still have a great program anyway. And they never cheat, by the way, and I'm not sure how they're doing it. Izzo and his staff do a great job there.
Well, I think the worst thing that happened to them the other night is they only hit 5 threes out of 26 attempts.
Oh, they were terrible. I mean, it was the first game of the season for all four teams, and none of them played well. But, fellas, I got some other stuff I think that our audience is going to be interested in. I was at the team hotel briefly in the afternoon before the game. I ran into Joel Ferguson.
What a segue. You are such a groupie. He's a total groupie. It's okay.
No, because you know why? Because you meet interesting people, you see people you know, and you get stories.
Okay. Go ahead.
So I ran into Joel Ferguson of the MSU Board of Trustees in the hotel lobby, and I'm sure you guys know this. He has been the big power behind Michigan State athletics for a very long time.
He certainly has.
I asked him about the Nassar situation, and you know what? He actually downplayed it a little, saying some of it is overblown, and he actually told me that the real reason the new trustee, Nancy Schlichting, who abruptly resigned from the board 2 weeks ago, was not, as she stated publicly, because of Michigan State stonewalling and lying about the Nassar investigation. Joel Ferguson says she quit because the board just wouldn't listen to anything she was saying. And I'm thinking, okay. Longtime MSU team doctor, Jeff Covan, very nice guy, told me that Nassar was not only his partner for many years, but actually a very nice guy himself. Such a talented guy. And Jeff said this guy was just terribly sick and none of us knew anything about it. I mean, what's going on? It just shocked everybody out there. Question is, of course, when did they know and what did they know, which is why Luana Simon may actually go to jail. And one more thing I got from Joel Ferguson, and I'm very sad to say this, and I know some of you out there know about this, but George Perlis is in a hospice now, and he's very near death.
How old is George? Has got to be well into his 80s.
80, I would think. Yeah, the longtime Michigan State coach.
Never in very good shape. He always was a little overweight. It was the
lineman, you know, heavyset guy.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So,
what are you saying? The closer you get to 80, the more susceptible.
I'm just saying he was really overweight. I think he drank a lot. Okay. You know, he made it that far. Nice guy, though. I like George.
Yeah,
Pearl.
No, I did too.
So the Wings. This is a really sad story because not long ago, because the season's only a month old, we kind of had, you know, reasonable hopes for them, but to 1-11-1 in their last 13 games is really scary. Outscored in the last four by 22-5. My God, a minus 33 goal differential. They're just awful in so many ways, and you wonder whether Jeff Blashill can survive. But interestingly, after the game, and you said you were in the scrum with Dylan Larkin, I thought what he said was kind of interesting.
It's frustrating right now. It's tough to try and find an answer when it's night after night, and we've tried different things, different lineups. It seems like it's a different story every night. We can't really seem to generate a full 60 minutes, a full complete game, but you know, none of us in this room have been through something like this, so we don't have the answer right now, but you know, I wish someone could tell us how.
So basically what he's saying is that tell us how. Well, it's up to Jeff Blashill to tell him how to get out of it, and apparently that's not happening. So
Okay, so I was, as you said, I was part of that. This kid was standing alone, all by himself in an anteroom, not in the Wings dressing room. And I'm looking at this kid, and he is so dejected, this hangdog expression on his face. He is so embarrassed. Jimmy Howard sure wouldn't have wanted to talk after that game because he wasn't good again. And I spent a bunch of time during the Rangers game with longtime Detroit Red Wings color commentator Paul Woods, the X-Wing. And by the way, Eli, Paul, what do you want to be remembered to you? He said, how's Eli doing? Please tell Eli that, you know, I'm thinking about him and so on and so forth. But at any rate, I had a long chat also last night with Rangers TV color man Joe Micheletti about firing Blashill and stuff. It's not totally Blashill's fault. We know that.
Of course not.
But here's what they said. Where are you going to go to replace him? And you know what I said? I said, you got a Stanley Cup winning head coach sitting on the Wings bench right next to him. And that, of course, is Danny Bilesman, also head coach of the Buffalo Sabres for so long. So Micheletti says, I wouldn't do that because whatever this means. Danny says, I love Danny, but he's just too technical, too focused on details. So, you know, Woody says that when Danny DeKeyser and Luke Glendening come back from injuries, the Wings will be better. I'm not sure did I buy that either?
I'm not sure.
And of course,
either. Everybody's
saying they need to play much better as a team, so on and so forth. These guys are playing like a team trying to get Blashill fired. So Micheletti asked me, he says, well, what kind of losses have these been? Are they playing hard? I said, no, they're not playing hard. They're not playing. They think they are, but they're not playing hard. This is a potential disaster.
Who do you think is the leader, the player leader on this team?
Well, it's Larkin. It's Larkin. That's why I said the other day when we said, what players do you like? I like that kid. He's got great talent, and he takes the mantle of leadership.
Does he actually take the mantle of leadership?
Well, sure he does. He's only, 23 years old? But he's trying
to speak. That may be the problem. He's just too young to take the mantle.
Well, there's veterans there that can help out. I mean,
and by the way, Mike Green is also, you know, hurt right now, too, and he's a big part of the Wings' power play, which has been atrocious. And that's one of the reasons why some people are saying no. Even though Danny Bilesman won a Stanley Cup with the Penguins, he's the guy with the Red Wings who's responsible for the power play, which has been terrible. So it'd be hard to make him head coach.
This doesn't work all the time, but I think it's time for a players' meeting, and not at the rink, not on the ice. They need to take the entire team someplace, sit down for a couple of hours. It works. It works. Doesn't work all the time, but it does work.
Maybe they've done that, maybe not.
Then you determine what you guys need to do. I mean, guys may be playing out of position. Who knows what they're doing? But, boy, I tell you, the results, and like Steve said in the beginning of the year, we're not going to win the cup.
Yeah. Did you watch the Pistons game Wednesday night, anybody? I saw the first half. I taped it when I was at Madison Square Garden. Just another tremendous performance by Andre Drummond. They beat a typically awful New York Knicks team, ruined by Jimmy Dolan, Thursday night in Detroit. I thought Tony Snell was just great in the first half. But you know what with these guys? They should win the next one. They're playing their whipping boys, Indiana Pacers. But with the Pistons, it's like win one, lose one, win one, lose one. I still think that's what we're going to say.
They're without two of their three best players. $40 million in salary. They're without Reggie Jackson, and they're without Blake Griffin. And this whole thing with Griffin is really it's kind of sad. You know, he plays. They push him so hard to make the playoffs last year, And to think, and so he couldn't play in the playoffs at all as they got swept in the worst sweep, I think, in NBA history by Milwaukee in terms of the scores and everything. So they didn't hurt this kid, but they play him so much that he can't play in the playoffs. And now he's missed the first 9 games of the year, and maybe more than that. Imagine not being able to get back to playing well or playing health with a 6-month break in between. So it's...
Eli, just think of this one phrase, the new Bill Walton.
Yeah.
This guy's always hurt.
Yeah.
He's just always hurt.
He's a player.
Yeah, when he's playing.
I know that, but, some guys are susceptible to it, some guys aren't, and I don't know. I don't know how you fix it. That's half the problem when somebody has a chronic problem of being hurt all the time. I don't know if you can hurt chronic. Chronic.
One way you don't fix it is by giving him a $171 million contract and kind of hamstringing the team. And by the way, one of his injuries is his hamstring. Anyway, who's the hottest team in the basketball? The Lakers.
The Lakers.
After last year, they were so awful. And, of course, they were saying LeBron James, he's checked out. He doesn't care. He's too much into Hollywood. He's making movies. What a bunch of garbage. He's playing unbelievable, shooting about 50% from the field. This is interesting because we know there's been a lot said about bad fan behavior. And in soccer, it's gotten off the charts in Europe and everything, the way the insults, the racial taunts.
And all over a 1-0 final. We just don't know who's going to win 1-0. And they're going crazy at this game.
But anyway,
cut off alcohol sales and nobody'd ever go.
So James is Davis are just amazing together. It's hard to imagine that you could have taken those two guys and we knew they'd be a great pairing, but to see them play this well and now be the top team in the league. Pretty impressive turnaround. James has a way of getting
you know
it back.
What, Eli? You're right. And I think this is actually good for pro sports. When you look at, as you say, what the Lakers are like now, and of course the Clippers, as well with Kawhi. And now we have already seen the death of the Golden State Warriors. The Golden State Warriors do not exist anymore, and they likely never will again as we knew them. So it's good. They're winning every year. People are saying it's just to see who Golden State plays in the finals and stuff. I think it's a good thing for the NBA.
Of course it is.
Listen, four guys that were starters. Looney has been hurt. Klay Thompson's going to miss the year. Durant leaves. And now Steph Curry broke his hand. So how do you expect
about 2 to 3 months?
Yeah. How do you expect him to do well? Is it no surprise there. It's just what happens.
That's a surprise. It's a surprise that this happened to the greatest basketball team in the NBA and arguably the greatest team ever. Golden State Warriors are amazing. And, with those guys gone, I don't care when Steph comes back. They're not going anywhere. They're not doing anything. And maybe Draymond gets hurt. Then what do you got?
Back to the Pistons for a second. You were mentioning Drummond. 21.3 points per game and 19.4 rebounds. Nobody averages 19 rebounds. In fact, I think Rodman's greatest year, he averaged 18 rebounds in a season. So
the thing I find interesting about Drummond is that, he averages all these blocks. He's the greatest shot blocker in the league, arguably at least. And I saw two occasions in that first half last night where he could have blocked shots, but he laid back and didn't do it. And the reason is because he knows how important he is to that team. Might have committed fouls. When we get in foul trouble, he's going to foul out. Then where are you? So he's a smart player, too, I think.
Speaking of fouls, you're going to love this. Juwan Howard, he's such a good guy.
Did you believe that game the other night? Did you believe that against who's that team again? Appalachian State.
Yeah.
Do they have a history with the University of Michigan?
Yeah. Well, they beat them 79-71, but still. The funny part was afterwards he's talking to the media, and if you hear the end of this, because there's kind of a little hum in the background, where he says, maybe I shouldn't be talking about this. And one of the assistants says, yes, you shouldn't, because he starts talking about players he's recruiting, which is a huge violation.
There are some guys out there who we've offered to, and we in the running. Hunter Dickerson is one. Moses Moody is the other. And Amari Burnett. I don't know if I should be mentioning
you. You should not.
Anyway, that's Juwan.
Eli, did you see that game? They're beating App State by 30 something in the second half, and App State cuts it to 4 4 before Michigan finally puts them away. You look at what happened at Ann Arbor in football, at Ann Arbor the other night, nearly happened in this game. It's mind blowing. They must be laughing at Michigan down in Boone, North Carolina.
Got some baseball to talk about. Of course, we've got Alan Trammell coming up soon.
We do.
First, I want to remind you that from the power and luxury of Navigator, that's just an amazing car. Now they got a new SUV, Star Lincoln does, this Corsair, a crossover with a whisper silent interior. The lineup of Hoop McInerney's Star Lincoln is just amazing. These SUVs are getting rave reviews all across the country. Sales are up over 20%. And thanks to two other stunning new entries in the market, that's Aviator, a little big for me, but the Nautilus. I like my Nautilus.
I know you do.
The comfort features, the audio, all the Co-Pilot 360, amazing technology. I've been loyal to Hoot McInerney's great family business since I met Hoot, the late Otto Wicon. That was back in the 70s. His family carries on the tradition of luxury. Dealership is spotless. The renowned star treatment. They get people coming from other dealerships that weren't happy the way they got treated there. They come to Star and they stay. So come see the best lineup of American SUVs or buy online with the effortless ownership experience at starlincoln.com. You order your model, your features, your color, you roll in and pick it up. It's Hoot McInerney, Star Lincoln at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And Luke Nowacki.
Luke.
Pinnacle Wealth Management. Luke is our guy. You know, most people just don't spend enough time on their investments. It's the most important thing to plan for your future, for your kids, for your retirement. Call Luke at 248-663-4748. He'll create a plan to help you reach your financial goals. The consultation is complimentary. He'll answer all your financial questions. Then you can decide at that time, do I want to stay with this guy? I think you will, but go check it out. Retirement on its way. Maybe you're young, got a balanced plan for the future obligations. Talk to Luke, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, again, 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. Other marketing names, product services, reference here, independent of Royal Alliance Associates. And you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Are you going to baseball now? Because if you are, I got something for Dennis Dale McClain right off the bat. Denny, you know I love you. I've been trying so hard to tell you. You won't listen to me. Now, the story broke 2 days ago. No exact details. But automated strike zones are going to be used in the minor leagues as soon as this season. I'm not talking about the Independent Atlantic League. The Atlantic reported the news this week, noting that MLB plans on using the technology in some capacity next year. Rob Manfred, MLB commissioner, and I quote, "The technology exists. We have it. We're going through a big upgrade of the technology during this offseason. I think we need to be ready to use an automated strike zone when the time is right. Why we're going to use it this year. It's still a little time away because the players have to sign off on it, and why wouldn't they? But the current collective bargaining agreement runs through 2021. After that, Denny, you might see mechanical computer umpires in Major League Baseball.
Not going to happen. First of
you
all,
you still don't buy it.
First, no, I don't buy it. It just doesn't make any sense. Listen, the umpires are a part of the entertainment factor with a Major League Baseball game, and it's not like it used to be.
Just a call against your team?
It's not like it used to be with Billy Martin and some of these other crazy managers kicking dirt
Weaver.
On each other and yeah. Weaver.
You
and
don't.
Somebody.
You don't need that entertainment
you
aspect. No.
Honest to God,
no, you don't.
You know
there's
what?
No
you don't
dirt need, kicking
listen,
anymore.
You guys, listen. You two guys have never played a ball in your life.
So what? So,
no.
Nonsense.
You got to realize
your level.
You have to realize that it is a part of the game. It doesn't have to happen every night, but when it happens, it's always fun to watch.
But it's
that's
all
I'm
already
telling
been,
you.
It's already been decreased by the replay rule.
I know it has, and that's a problem. But listen, if they're going to allow you to steal first base, and if they're going to wave you down to first base for a walk, they're going to continue to experiment with all kinds of technology. I don't know where it goes from here.
See,
but I always said they're going to experiment. I've always said they were going to try it. But I just don't think it can work. I'm sure because you've got the biggest thing they're going to fight, and I just read it a couple of weeks ago, is the height of the player. They can't make that work yet. And the
computers do make it work
now.
Oh, my
God, this guy. What am I reading? Braille? Something? What am I, picking up rocks and throwing them in the sun?
You can be more exact. Now, on the other hand, football has got a much bigger problem than that. And that is this pass interference rule. Tony Dungy, who has never said a harsh word about anybody, had it this week. And after the Giants played Dallas on Monday night, the screen grab, how the Dallas cornerback clearly made contact with the Giants tight end Evan Engram before the ball arrived, pivotal second and 10 play from the Cowboys 11. The score was just 23-18. Penalty would have given the Giants a first and goal at the Cowboys 6-yard line. No flag was thrown. Pat Shurmur protests the call. And what happens? It's obvious. And they still don't overturn it. And so far, of the 53 challenges, only five have been overturned. Yeah. So what Dungy says, he says, officiating, it makes the officiating department look inept for not changing the call on obvious penalties like that one. He also called for the league to end the pass interference rule if they're not going to enforce it. He's not the only one. Troy Aikman and many others are saying either do it the right way or throw it.
Hey, Eli, I want you to imagine this scenario. 1906. Our three grandfathers are sitting around having a conversation. Mr. Zerrett and Mr. Page say to Mr. McLean, "You know, Mr. McLean, horses are on the way out. We think that the motor car is the future." Mr. McLean, "No way. The motor car is never going to make it. It's always going to be about horses."
That's what you sound like. Mr. McLean and Mr. Zerrett would have gone down to the Lincoln dealer, and we'd have had cars by then if the horses were leaving. Because wherever he goes to get a car, I'm getting one too.
Anyway, so I want to get into baseball here. By the way, looking at the free agent situation, you got the top three free agents are Strasburg, Rendon, and Cole. Gerrit Cole, Strasburg, and Rendon. And so Scott Boras has got these three clients. So I look it up today. I do the research. I say, how much money does this guy make? Scott Boras has currently, you ready for this? Listen to these numbers.
I know.
He has $2.3 billion in current Major League Baseball contracts. Obviously, he got Harper last year, et cetera. He is going to make this year $118 million just in fees.
Not bad walking around money.
And to show the power he has, you saw after the World Series, Gerrit Cole and the next day Strasburg both had Scott Boras hats on.
This is a perfect example of somebody controlling the direction of an organization, isn't it? Mm-hmm. When you talk about the players.
An agent.
And an agent of all people. But you know what? When the NBA, the players who we always agree have taken over the NBA, it's the same thing.
Yeah,
not
right.
only the players took over the NBA, but with the agents that were a part of it also were a part of it when they took it over.
LeBron and Rich Paul.
Absolutely. And this is what's going on in baseball, because baseball's got another problem coming. They've just launched an investigation into free agent collusion again. It's like baseball needs this again, right? They need this again. They've already given up about $600 million, for God's sakes, with collusion the last couple of times. And now they got another one going
to be in. What an awful business it is. Hey, Danny, I got another one for you here, pal.
And Tony, now, Tony Clark issued a big statement and threatened him and everything else. And Clark made essentially what he implied was, if we're going to do this again, everybody's going to get a piece.
Tony Clark Players Association chief.
Yep. Right, former Detroit Tigers.
He's done a real good job, by the way.
Now, if you guys watch the Yankees much over the past couple of years, you know that Gary Sanchez, I've done some research on this, Gary Sanchez is the worst defensive catcher since the late Joe Schmo played for the Cincinnati Red Stockings in 1871.
His name Joe Schmo?
Joe Schmo?
You're kidding.
I'm kidding.
Oh, thank
I'm
you.
Kidding. That's how bad Gary Sanchez is.
Okay.
A catcher who can't actually catch a pitched ball very well. Now, the Yankees this week went out and hired Tanner Swanson off the Minnesota Twins staff, who will become, get this, the catching coach for the Yankees. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
A catching coach. Yeah. We had Hal Neragon here.
And that was his job. He was just the catching coach.
Michael Rourke. Mike Rourke was another one. He was a catching coach as well as an assistant to the pitching coach. Yeah, we've always had catching coaches.
That was news. I just saw that and said, catching coach?
Let's do this, okay? Let's go to the mailbag. Let's knock out the mailbag quickly. And then I want to get into these 10 players on the that the Modern Baseball Era Committee is going to vote for in December. That includes Lou Whitaker. Get a little look at that, and then we'll talk down and trammel. Okay, Bob, are you ready are you ready with the bag?
Well, not really. And then the other thing, I mean,
not really. What do you mean?
Well, guys,
not really?
I've got a bunch of baseball stuff, and the Hall of Fame thing was one of the things I wanted to get.
What else you got in baseball? Go ahead.
Can we do that then?
Go ahead, Bob.
Why don't you take it? Why don't you pick it up right here? Because you've been talking about it. Say, oh, by the way, this week, the new Hall of Fame committee, whatever it is, go ahead. You want to name some of the names, obviously, besides Lewis?
What they started doing was, when you had really good players not make it in the 15 years that you're up for eligibility, they created these three committees, the Modern Baseball Committee.
You're talking about the Hall of Fame now.
Right. There's one for the Golden Days, 50 to 69. There's one for pre-1950 baseball, and the modern era is 1970 to 1987.
I'm not in any of those.
Yes, you are.
Which one am I in?
Golden days, 50 to 69.
I'm older than that.
But you played from 63 to 69.
Oh, I see. It's the playing years. Okay, yes. I got it.
Anyway, first time on the ballot are Thurman Munson, Dwight Evans, and Lou Whitaker. Thurman Munson, to me, is a no. I know he's a great story.
I agree.
He died in the plane crash. But no, he just doesn't have the numbers, right. And so I don't think he's going to make it. Don Mattingly is another one. Mattingly.
Pretty good numbers.
He had four or five amazing years.
For 5 years, he was one of the greatest all-around players who ever lived.
And his 830 OPS is pretty amazing. In that three-year span, 84 to 86, he had 368 RBIs. That's 120 or so a year. He had 654 hits. So I still call him a marginal one.
Never lose sight of the fact the guys that come out of the East Coast, the Yankees and the Boston Red Sox, they get favorable play.
That's right.
Better play than anybody else.
You know, there's 16 members on this committee, and you have to get – and we don't know who they are.
You got to get 12, right?
They're either former players, Hall of Famers, a couple of sports writers, so who knows. But, yes, in general, the New York guys do get a favorable treatment.
Okay, you got these other guys they like? Yeah. And if you don't, I do.
Tommy John, I say no.
Why not Tommy John?
Pitched 26 years.
26?
Why not Jim Cott? They're the same. And if they put these guys in the Hall of Fame,
he's not
those guys?
Cott's not on the list.
John's, the Tommy John surgery, his name is mentioned every day in baseball. He pitched 14 years after he underwent that surgery that now has his name. He was 288 and 231. I don't know. There was 14 years that he won 11 or fewer games.
But can I ask you a question? You mean to tell me for 12 more wins he goes in automatically?
Well, I don't think 300 is automatic. Is it automatic?
Yeah, it's more or less automatic.
Always was. Sure, it still is. But nobody's
–
not many guys are going to be winning 300 anymore because they pitched every 4 days, now it's five.
But isn't 288 the same as more or less 300? I know it's not the same. It is. I mean, 288 wins. Listen, you know what I think is more impressive? 231 losses.
You know what, fellas? My take on this is that, and you may agree with me, is I don't think that either Kitty Cott or Tommy were quite Hall of Famers. But again, when you had Ted Williams and Ernie Harwell and those guys sitting around in the proverbial smoke-filled back room, so-and-so was a great guy. Oh, a heck of a – let's put him in the Hall of Fame. You've cheapened the Baseball Hall of Fame already so much. Put him in. Put everybody in.
Jim Cott deserves the Hall of Fame. He had so many golden gloves. His whole house is gold.
He's not even on the list. Oh, you got Dwight Evans.
Shame.
19 years for the Red Sox, 2,446 hits, 8 gold gloves. Still don't think so.
No.
272 hitter. Good OPS.
Again, Eli, I'll go through the whole list. Garvey, Dale Murphy, Parker, Ted Simmons, Marvin Miller. Put them all in the Hall of Fame because of what you've done.
What do you mean of what I've done?
What are you talking about?
Personally, they've cheapened the Hall of Fame with all these veterans committees. Put all those guys in the Hall, especially Lewis, because Tramp can't go into the Hall of Fame without Lewis.
Only two or three are going to make it. Lou, 19 years of the Tigers, all-star team 5 times. 3 gold gloves. Lou belongs in there. He's also done things that no other second baseman did. I mean, he had 200 homers. Only he and Joe Morgan have that. I think he will go in this time. I think it's he and Trammell belong in there together. We'll see what Allen says.
But I don't know. I don't know where you're coming off of this because they're Detroit guys. We love them. We've known them for 100 years. But I'm looking at this other list. Here's a Detroit guy, Ted Simmons. What kind of a ball player was he? Dave Parker, what a monster. Yeah. Michigan State, Steve Garvey. Put them all in.
Well, I don't know.
You cheapened the Hall.
It's not going to happen. Bob, anyway.
Nobody wants to cheapen the Hall of Fame. Nobody wants
it's
to do
been
that.
Done.
But they
well,
did
don't cheapen it more than that. Sounds dumb.
That's enough. I mean,
these guys were great players.
Okay. We got to say goodbye to our radio audience, to WCWA and WDFN. You, by the way, download the podcast and listen to the Alan Trammell interview. We're going to talk to Alan for a long time. We got so much to talk about with him. But you have been listening to the No Filter Sports podcast. Marvin Miller has to go in. Marvin Miller has to go in.
Absolutely.
He didn't make it the last time. They put him up last time. But, in fact, let's see, he fell one vote shy of induction for the 2011 class. But they've put him on this baseball.
You know what I don't understand? Marvin Miller not going in. the first opportunity, he should have gone in. My God, this is the guy that created what they have today, the hundreds of millions of dollars.
But you guys were just bitching about what they have today. I'm listening to you two bitching about agents running the sport, guys making hundreds of millions. Marvin Miller, not even a baseball fan, not even a lawyer, is responsible for that.
Listen to me. For God's sakes, nobody's bitching here about Marvin Miller or anybody else.
You were complaining about the
I wasn't complaining either.
Out of control. The agents won the game.
I'm not complaining about that.
Bob, we're not complaining. We were just stating a fact.
Just talking about the night. I didn't complain and say the players
So you're okay with Scott Boreson controlling Major League Baseball, essentially. You're okay with that then?
If the players want to be negotiated by Mr. Boris, that's their decision, not yours and not mine.
And if you want,
so knock it off.
And if you want to hold guys back, you want
to. I don't agree with you. And if it were up to me, unfortunately for you, Danny, it isn't. I don't want Marvin Miller in the Baseball Hall of Fame because I hate what's happened to baseball.
Why?
Oh, gee, you hate what's
happened. Your panties are too tight today.
How many times have I said this? If after 1968, my beloved Tigers had lost Denny McClain, Mickey Lolich, and Al Kaline to free agency, I'm probably out. I'm probably done with baseball.
You know, well, okay, that's fine. Have a good life.
That's what it is. My life would have gone on.
And go play with your idol.
You sound like a crusty old conservative,
which
you're not.
I know that I do.
Jeez.
And I stand by what I'm saying.
Okay.
Oh, boy. But
are we
when
ready?
You stand in the middle of the street too long, you wind up getting run over.
Let's knock out the mailbag.
Do the mailbag. You ready?
I will. I want to mention this one thing. This is we're talking about salaries in baseball. The Yankees reinstated this week Jacob Ellsbury from the 60-day, what do they call it now? It's a disabled list to me.
Yeah.
Jacob Ellsbury has not played in 2 years since 2017 because of a variety of injuries. He is owed for this coming season more than $21 million for this year alone. It's the final season of a guaranteed $153 million 7-year contract. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
There's something wrong with that, Bob.
Bob, you're right. These owners just aren't making enough money. More of the money should go to the owners.
How much money do you think they're making?
I think the billionaires deserve more. I really, really do. The billionaires are just
I got news for you, pal. This is the worst business you could possibly be in. These guys are brilliant guys. They got everything in the world. Billions of dollars, homes. Here's what they don't have. When they get off their private Lear jets onto the tarmac, nobody has any idea who they are. The only thing they lack is celebrity. How do you become a celebrity?
You buy a baseball team.
What are you talking about?
By the way, Bob,
this is a separate topic you're talking about. You're talking about something completely different.
Yeah, Bob.
You're saying the players don't deserve as much money as they're getting is what you're saying.
I'm telling
you. Then who's going to get the money?
Eli, his panties are too tight.
I'm telling you.
I mean, this is out of control today. And by the way, Bob, none of these billionaires own a Learjet anymore. That's the little guys flying around in Learjets now. These guys are flying around in Boeing business jets for $60, $80, and $200 million.
Yeah, but
boy, what's the matter with you today?
The players are entertainers. Without the players, the game doesn't exist.
A lot of the people listening to us right now are with me,
Bob. Let me tell you one thing.
Bob,
let me tell you one thing. I don't know what the hell's wrong with you today. You didn't medicate this morning. Listen, let me say this to you. Listen to me. If the owners could not afford $150 million over 5, 6, 7, 10 years, they wouldn't have the money, and number two, they couldn't pay it. Period. That's all there is to it. If they can afford it, let them pay the money. I want the players to have the money. The players haven't had the damn money for so long, and all of a sudden we're starting to catch up a little bit. Do I begrudge the guys that are making all this money? Hell no. Had we just played a little later, we'd have had some of this, but it wasn't meant to be. It would have been nice. Would have been nice, especially now.
By the way,
all I'm saying is this. You got to spend that kind of money if you want to win, if you want to keep up.
Bob,
and that's why baseball is crazy. It's gotten crazy.
Well, then talk to the Detroit Tigers. Tell these guys to get off their ass and start putting the team together.
How about the Bucks center, Antetokounmpo? You don't think he should get 5 years, $250 million after this year? Why aren't you upset about that?
You guys agree with this or not? I have no problem with it. These guys in Hollywood are making $25 million a movie. I don't care. That's fine. Good for them. It's capitalist society.
Sure.
I don't mind Antetokounmpo making $40 million this year because he's probably worth it. How come the long-term guaranteed contracts? How come? It would be a better sports world if, yeah, pay me $40 million bucks for this year. Sure, you deserve it. But I ain't paying you guaranteed $40 million for the next 7 years, not knowing, as in the case we just saw with the former Red Sox, Jacob Ellsbury, that you ain't even going to be playing for 2 years.
The reason they get a long-term contract is because somebody else would give it to them.
And it's Jacoby.
Yes. Nobody's forced.
That's number one. Number two, all these contracts are guaranteed by insurance resources. Believe me, every one of them. And I don't mean to, throw it on the insurance companies, but that's who pays. When these guys get hurt, that's who picks up the tab, Bob.
This conversation is from 15 years ago. This shouldn't be happening today. But go ahead.
You don't think this conversation goes on today?
Sure it does.
You don't think this happens everywhere today?
It's old news.
Really? It's minimal.
Hey, Bob. We're going to talk to Alan shortly. And I remember Bill LaJoy, who brilliantly signed him and Lance and Lou and Jack. He got Hall of Fame players he drafted in a few years. And in 1990, Bill LaJoy said, you know, I'm going to get out of this. When they signed Ricky Henderson to a $3 million a year contract, that was it for me. Shut the hell up.
And he
Give
got out of it.
Give me a break. Yeah.
And he got out of it.
It was outrageous then.
It's a bad business, Eli.
It is not a bad business.
Bad business.
How can it be a bad business?
Okay.
How many people are they drawing at the Tigers games this last year, Kenny?
Oh, you know what you need to do? You need to eat some meat.
Bob, they're drawing five times what they did back when Al Kaline played, okay? A million was good attendance now. Now it's over 2 million, all right? And the games are on TV. The sport's immensely popular. That's why there's more money in it. That's why we got the issue in college sports, because there's billions of dollars going around and the players don't get any of it. So that's why the players deserve to get paid. Anyway, let's
And what's the basketball? Is Kyrie?
Brandon, are you laughing with us
his
or
last
at
name?
Us?
What's his last name?
Yeah, let's hear from Brandon. He's 39 years old and a whack.
Just hang on a minute. What's Kyrie's last name?
Irving.
All right, let me tell you something. Last year, he made $20 million from playing the sport he's a great star in, right?
Yeah, right.
He made $23 million off the court. Pepsi-Cola commercials, believe it or not.
Well, Kyrie Irving's not making that much money from playing because he's hurt all the time.
Okay.
Well, he made $20 million last year. That's pretty good walking around money.
Right. Time out. Brandon, something tells me we've wasted 15 minutes of this show.
No, wasted. No, I want to hear from Brandon on this.
I've just been listening with a smile on my face. This is good.
Are you laughing at us or with us, Brandon?
If you ask me, I think if these owners are making X amount of dollars, then the players need to be making a lot, too.
There we go. Okay.
You're right. That sums it up simply.
Simply.
Now to the mailbag.
Yes. The new, more rapid fire mailbag. Let's go.
All right, here we go. So this week, the amazing Iffy the Dopester posted a pic on Twitter from the year 1966 of a young, studious-looking Denny McLean leaning over a bespectacled boy and giving him a piano lesson. The Associated Press caption read that you had 45 piano students as a Major League Baseball player who won 20 games that year and went 16-6. How much did you charge for your lessons? Did you really need the money? And did you go over to their houses individually?
I did give organ and piano lessons. I charged $5 a lesson. That's what I charged. That's all I charged. And that young man's name, by the way, is Clyde Jack. He lives over.
You remember
over in,
that?
Yeah, I see him once in a while. The kid became a superstar on the keyboards.
And, really?
Yeah, Clyde Jack. He lives over in the Jackson, Michigan area.
Uh-huh. But, did you really need the money as a 20-game winner?
Yeah, I was making that year $12,500. That's all I was making.
Enter Marvin Miller, which was necessary.
God bless Marvin Miller.
Keep going. Next century.
Will you calm down, Eli? Take a chill pill. We're doing the mailbag now.
I got the flu and shingles at the same time. Give me a break.
So, Denny, David Schemmer then tweets me, that among your students was his childhood babysitter and his next-door neighbor, Martha Schott. I asked this guy what they thought of Denny McLean, the piano teacher, and he wrote, I think they really liked him. It was organ lessons in their case, though. I attended her recital where they passed out 8x10 glossies of Denny and a bottle of Pepsi in Denny's honor. He and Dick McAuliffe were my favorite players back then. I was thrilled to be at that recital with teacher Denny McLean.
How about that?
How about that? Okay. About that? That was great. Next letter.
Look at Eli. Like,
Next letter. Let's go.
And I have to follow that up with this, okay? So I wanted to make sure I had all those numbers right. So I go to your Wikipedia page, which is significant. And I'm just skimming through Denny's Wikipedia page just to get to the correct numbers. And I found this. quote from Wikipedia. In 1970, McLean and his friend Jim Northrup co-schemed to make more money. They were back in Detroit furthering a plan that they shared to generate a nude baseball model calendar. These efforts eventually fell short, end quote. What? What is that about?
I don't know anything about it.
It's all Wikipedia.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait.
I will
Let
say,
me tell you something.
I've read Denny's Wikipedia, and it is a book, and it is very interesting.
Let me tell you.
What nude bottles? Playboy pad was in Chicago. Did you get some?
Northrup and his dad had all these wild schemes. I mean, especially his dad. His dad was I would like to say mover and shaker, but he never moved very much. He shaked a lot, but he didn't move very much. And Jimmy just kept saying, listen, stay away from my dad. Stay away from my dad. He's my dad is trouble. My dad is trouble. And we had a lot of fun together. But the bottom line was the father is the one that came up with the nude photos. and what they were, listen to this, and what they were, you ready for this? They were mud wrestlers. The girls were mud wrestlers.
You're lying now.
No, absolutely not. And they were mud wrestling. There were two places, one on the east side, one on the west side. I can't remember the two names. But I'm going to tell you, they used to run these poor girls back and forth. 1 week over there, 1 week over there, and then 1 week up there. But they were trying to do a nude poster in the mud. In the mud. And Jimmy, but listen to this, though. Jimmy Northrup wanted to wear his uniform shirt while they were taking all these pictures. So it was crazy stuff. Just crazy stuff.
You know, I just mentioned Hugh Hefner and his Playboy mansion in Chicago. Of course, he had one in L.A., as everybody knows. The business was in Chicago. You were a major national star. Did Hef invite you over to the Playboy place in Chicago in the mansion?
There. I was there a number of times.
What was that like?
Bob.
Super. Super
we're
duper.
Dialing Alan in 4 minutes, so I think you've got to better speed up, okay?
Look at him. I'm telling you, he's just always always on edge.
I'm not going to be late for him.
If we dial Alan in five and a half minutes, what happens?
I'm not going to be late for him. Let's go.
But we could be late for everybody else.
Let's go. Next letter.
Here's Freddie the Pizza Man. Future guests I would like to see you guys get, Joel LaPointe and Kurt Sylvester. Now, Eli and I know both of those guys very well. Joel LaPointe's a terrific
journalist.
I like
Joe and I like Kurt. I say no to that. I don't think enough people care.
It's just they're not well-known enough names. We have had Bobby Hall on recently and Lindstrom.
Well, what if we have,
come on. Show,
but what if we have somebody on that's really got something to say? Like the guy that owns the Clinton Sox over there with the minor league problem that's about to develop.
Well, we should have that as a conversation afterwards. Right. Let's get on with the mailbag because we're calling Alan in 3 minutes now. Go ahead, Bob. What's next?
I'm going to go take a piss and you guys call Alan right now if you want. I mean, really, this is ridiculous.
Let's go.
I mean, this is ridiculous, Eli. Just calm down, okay? We got a couple of minutes here. Johnny English back with us this week. He thanks me for answering his email about the marathon, says he enjoys hearing my perspectives on things, and I didn't mean to prompt Eli to yell at you and get him angry with you. We're talking about that, which Eli, of course, is always yelling and stomping around and uptight on this show, ladies and gentlemen. Ridiculous. Now, here's another topic that I think might trigger Eli again.
Oh, no.
But I'm asking it sincerely.
What?
Is there any chance that you guys could have Ron Cameron on the show as a guest?
No. No.
Then he says, I sense that Eli really dislikes him, but you and Denny don't. What is Eli's problem with Ron Cameron?
I don't dislike Ron.
Ron's a good guy.
It's the same four story. He's going to tell you his George Kell story. He's going to tell his
and what he had for lunch.
Yeah, what was the one armed guy for the Red Wings? Bud Lynch story.
Bud Lynch.
And
Bud Lynch.
I've heard.
I think that was tongue in cheek, actually, just to get your goat, Eli, which is easy to do. To tell you the truth.
What else?
Now here's Daniel Arnold who says, "Hey guys, continue to enjoy the show. Just wanted to comment on your newer format, which I don't think it really is, where you do your normal hour or so, and then you have your guest on. Other podcasts I've followed over the years seem prone to turn every guest interview into an hour-long deep dive, which often loses me. But you guys doing 20 minutes or so, it keeps me interested in people. Otherwise, I might not even care about that much. Website submissions. Eli hates it when I don't give the information. So you can call yourself and leave us a message at 760-89-BALLS. You can also email the show, asknofilter.com, or you can tweet us, at Eli Zarrett,
ask no filter,
YouTube Denny.
Asknofilter@gmail.com.
Thank you very much. I always mess that up, don't
that's
I?
Okay, that's
yeah,
okay.
Every time.
It's okay.
And almost every time. Yeah, it's amazing. So anyway, and it's at MU2Denny or at Bob Page Sports. Steve Chris writes in, hey, Bob, minor correction on the last show. Jesus Is Just All Right With Me was by the Doobie Brothers, not the Birds. I had regular listener Paul Caron take me to task for that same thing on Twitter. Guys, here's why I said what I did. I don't know why. I just – they're a little too slick and packaged for me. I'm just not a huge Doobies fan. Yeah. We idolized the Birds. When I played, I had a 12-string Rickenbacker because Jim McGuinn was my idol, come Roger McGuinn. And that's why I mentioned the Birds doing Jesus Is All Right With
Did
Me.
You hear those sirens? Those sirens are coming to get you.
Coming to
the
get you.
Are on the street in New York City outside my apartment.
They're saying finish the mailbag in 60 seconds or we're breaking in.
All right. Do I have anything else? All right. All right. I'll tell you what. Let's get, since you've had enough with a mailbag, obviously, you're on pins and needles today. Let's make you happy and get to Alan Trammell.
Let's do that. Great idea.
Here's the pitch. He swings. There's a drive to left. It's deep. It is way back and it is gone. A two-run homer by Trammell. There's a swing and there's another drive to left. It's deep and this one is gone. The second home run by Trammell. Whitaker scores. Here comes Trammell running home his second consecutive home run.
They were both, of course, off Eric Schau. In my fine book in the 84 Tigers that Alan was so helpful with, he said it was the first one, was a little slider that never broke, and there it was, the first time you'd faced Eric Schau. So much has happened to your career, Alan. Thanks for joining us. The first question has to be, how has the Hall of Fame changed your life? Is it just more people congratulating you, or is it just beyond that? Tell us how what it's been like.
Well, I mean, it's definitely beyond that, Eli. It's, you know, just to have your name and put the HOF on the side of that. I want to try to downplay it. That's always been kind of my style, but how can you, to be honest with you? It's an elite status. I'm very humbled still, even though it's been over a year, almost 2 years now. That part hasn't changed, but the fact that you are in that esteemed club, it's a fraternity that it's not unlike no other. Again, I'm very, very proud and humbled.
We're talking so much about your second baseman, and he deserves to be there too. I know there's not much any of us can hear about if somebody's going to make the Hall of Fame, but God, he really he deserves to be there.
What do you think?
Well,
you had a good, go ahead.
You're right, Denny. You're right. And the first thing, this is kind of what I've been hoping for over the last, couple years now, that the first thing that had to happen was to get on the ballot. And that has happened. And now, all of a sudden, I mean, Lou has gotten no love over the years. It's a shame. But the fact now that he's on the ballot, I'm reading and listening, and he's got, like, one of the better cases is what they're saying. So I've got my fingers crossed, guys. It would be awesome to have another Tiger. And he's very deserving. I just don't understand where the love has been for Lou. But we're hoping that at the moot point in a couple of months and that he'll be in the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown as well.
Have you talked to him about it at all, about his anxiety? I imagine there has to be some.
I just texted him the other day when I got a call from Chris McCoskey. I did not know. I wasn't aware. Actually, I was in Las Vegas playing a little golf.
The baseball writer, Chris McCoskey.
Yes, yes, yes. And so I was not aware. I gave him a call. We chatted for a few minutes, and he gave me the list. And now I go on the internet. You can find it. But I did not know that it was coming out in the other day. But I'm very happy that he finally has got on the ballot. And again, as I mentioned, that the first thing is to get on the ballot. Now he's got to have the committee. I don't know who the committee is. It's right. Very secretive, as it should be. But whoever is part of that, I'm hoping that he gets the at least the 12 votes that will put him in Cooperstown.
You know, I looked at WAR, and WAR is a big statistic. I know you're a stat guy. You're a sports fan. I want to talk about the amazing sports
I'm
fan
laughing.
That you are.
Hold on, Eli. Let me just interrupt you. I'm laughing because when we played and when Denny played, there was no WAR. We just played baseball. Right. And then they tell me that our WAR was pretty good. I just laugh. I'm like, we weren't even thinking about it.
By the way, our WAR was over the poker games we had every
night. No, but here is a good stat. Point. Okay, Lou is number 49 all-time in war. And if you take out the pre-1950 guys like Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb, he's 31st in war since 1950. And you, by the way, are 40th. So his war is even ahead of yours. Yours is way up there. So it seems like...
You're right. No, it is better. And that's why I just can't... It's beside me that nobody has considered him or talked about him. And now all of a sudden we're talking about him. It's like, where have you guys been? What have you, you know, back in the Riders, and I don't want to get into all that stuff, but the fact that he didn't get the 5% the first time is a joke. Yeah. And I'll leave it at that.
Hey, Tram, as regular listeners to our show know, I frequently disagree with my old buddy Eli Zarin about a lot of things here. So I disagree with him on this as well. I think he's wrong. The very first question that has to be asked you is not what he asked you. Here would be my very first question to you. The day you arrived in Major League Baseball, I took a cameraman down to the ballpark. I put you and Lewis on together, and I did an interview with you guys. So my question to you is, how the hell could Alan Trammell be 61 years old?
Well, there's an old saying, guys, that father time is undefeated.
Yeah.
And you know how it works. And, yeah, you know what? I'm still young at heart. I obviously don't look it anymore, but the fact is that that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But, yeah. Where have the years gone by, guys? But, again, Father Time is undefeated, and he always will be.
Yeah, but you look pretty good for 61.
You know what? I've been able to stay. You know, I still have a lot of energy, and I think that's the key for me is that I stay active. And so, you know, for me, that's been the key.
So Ralph Houck was the manager when I first started covering the Tigers, like 75, 76. And they lost 102 games in 75. And Ralph was saying, just wait. We got these two young guys, Whitaker and Trammell. You're going to love them. They're going to be great players. We all got excited. And then I meet you and Lou. You're standing on the outside a door in the Holiday Inn, ground floor. This is the spring of 77. You weigh about 150 pounds, and so does Lou. I expected after Ralph's build up to see Canseco and McGuire. I thought I was going to see some 6'5", 240-pounders. And there,
you changed us, Eli. We were about 160.
Okay. Good enough.
And that's legit. That's legit. And, you know, when we first, Sparky didn't come for another year, but still, we were still, you know, very small weight-wise. And Sparky across the street was a Steak and Shake. And he used to tell us that, I want you guys to get a milkshake every night because he was trying to put the weight on us.
That's so funny.
No. That's true. That is a true story. But, you know, we were frail. We were young, you know, physically and mentally. But, you know, we got a chance to come to the big leagues because the Tigers at that point, similar to what we are now, we weren't very good. We got our foot in the door and... You know, we both were able to hold our own and obviously, you know, get better.
Again, time.
And some others did as well. Yeah, but, you know, getting the opportunity was the first part of it, and we took advantage of it.
Yeah, because I talk about that when I came up, too. There was a change going on with the organization in 63 and just happened to be one of the guys that got called up in September and got lucky and stuck with the ball club. I mean, that's the way it was. Hey, question for you. You ever want to manage again?
No, I do not.
Really?
You know, a few years, because it's been 15 years now, and I don't even want to coach anymore.
Really?
The gig that I have, doing a variety of things, just being a part, I'm kind of a hit-and-run guy, and I get the chance to come home. And again, at my age at 61, I just feel like this is the right place for me. I'm involved. They keep me a part of it, which I'm very happy to be a part. But, this is where I should be at this stage of my life. I'd love to do this for another 10 years plus. But you know what? There was a time. But again, it's been a long time. It was a tough time as far as the record-wise. I enjoyed the heck out of it. But I've really enjoyed every part of baseball that I've done, whether it be, you know, the coaching, the managing, whatever it has been, I've enjoyed every part of baseball.
Hey, Tram, listener Paul Caron wrote in, we tweeted out your appearance on the show, so a lot of the fans wanted to ask you questions. And he wondered if you had any regrets about your managing career, such as, were you too nice a guy to be a good manager?
I'll defend myself on that because, again, don't mistake, you know, the kindness for weakness. I was brought up you know, properly. And I, you know, I, first of all, I give credit to my parents, some discipline and structure, then the coaching staff. I'm a very competitive person, but I don't show it outwardly sometimes. Some of my closer friends know, you know, how I am, but I appear and all that perception is I'm some guy that you can walk over. That's, I didn't play 20 years in the big league, you know, being a nice guy all the time. I can tell you that.
I got to add to that.
You know,
I
got to be honest with you. I've covered sports for 45 years professionally. You were one of the very nicest guys I ever knew in my whole career. Yeah. Don't BS us.
Now, I'm,
I tried when I was on the radio or TV, I tried to do that. I was aware of what was going on. I think some of the guys, you know, again, back in the day, today, and years to come, you know, they don't think before they speak. And that was one of the lessons I was taught a long time ago. And, you know, to me, it's not that tough. But for some guys, it's difficult to do. Again, we're all different. The fact of the matter is, you know, I'm looking back, we did some things right. You know, in 2003, the Tigers, and with my name on top of it, we lost 119 games. 2006, 3 years later, and obviously there was a lot of things that did change, but 3 years later, they went to the World Series.
Right.
You know, things can change. We were helped the process along with my coaching staff. And I'll stand by that. But, you know, the record speaks for itself. It was terrible.
Well, speaking of Alan being a nice guy, I'm going to tell you people out there a few things you don't know about Alan Trammell. When I wrote this book on the Tigers, Sparky said to me, you know, Tram could really stir the pot. He was an agitator, and he feared, Sparky said, that Lance or Gibby or Jack were going to pop him one and cost him his career. People don't know that about you. And also the other thing they don't know about you is you are a maniacal sports fan. Now, in the pre-internet days, yep, before you go, you used to read that USA Today Sports. That was the Bible back then because it was the national news. Everything was in newspapers. And you would chirp away this little, and finally Gibby would say, Tram, shut up! So you did have a way of agitating your buddies, and they never did go off on you because, as Sparky said, they loved you.
Well, as Denny knows, what, you know, in the clubhouse, and that's family, and we're with each other, you know, so much of the year that there's a lot of things that go behind the scenes, and you got to have some fun, and sure, we did. But I was a little agitator, but they respected me as I respected them, the way that we went about our business on the field, and that really bottom line is all that matters. But again, going back to, you know, all the time that we have on our own and being together is important. And so we had a great group. We had a lot of guys similar in age as Denny right. did in that era.
Right.
I think that's important yep. when you have a nucleus of, you know, a handful or maybe a few more that kind of hang around, same age as I mentioned, listen to the same kind of music. That's all important as far as, you know, performance on the field, and just what a great time. I wouldn't change anything. I respect from Sparky and Ralph Houck and the coaches that helped along the way that we were taught how to play baseball. And, you know, it's a different era now, but the game is still the same. And I'll stand by that. I'll take that to the grave. And we were taught how to play baseball the right way.
Tram, a lot of controversy this year about the baseball. You believe mm-hmm. there's anything in the baseball that's making it pop any further? Because there was a university that tested it and said, well, quite possibly the ball's going 4.5 feet more. Good. I mean, come
well,
on,
drag. What do you think?
I do believe there's something. And Justin Verlander came out during the summer. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, when Justin speaks, you know, people are going to listen. And, you know, I think that there was a lot of comments from Major League Baseball. And then all of a sudden at the end of the year, the Commissioner Manfred, you know, he made a comment saying that I think we're going to have to do, you know, look into something. So it just, he didn't really say that there was something different, but I could try to, I kind of read between the lines that I think there was, and there's no question the guys are bigger, stronger, faster, but there's some of those balls are going way too far. Oppo too.
But Tram, the ballparks are substantially smaller too. I mean, to me, that's the biggest thing. And the pitch, and listen, with all due respect, and you know, I pitcher obviously for a long time, I think the pitching sucks.
Well, I mean, it's a combination of a lot of different things. And, you know what, I don't know. I don't have any proof. And so I do think that there's something to it. And but the fact is that the pitching has been diluted. Yes, I don't think there's any doubt about that. There's a lot of reasons why. But to start with the question, I think there might have been something. There is something that was in the baseball. They tightened it up a little bit. The seams are a little smaller. I know they're throwing a little firmer. But when you throw the ball down the middle of the plate, Denny, as you know, they're going to hit it. If you fall behind, they're going to get it.
Yeah, they do have a tendency to go very far if they're down the middle.
Even a little guy like me can hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah, but you had a great swing, Bubba. You really had a great swing.
Thank you.
The other thing is, what I'm assuming then, Alan Trammell could put a uniform on right now and go out and hit 50 home runs?
I don't think so. I'm going to say 25.
25 is good.
Because
you're 61, right?
Do you realize that with what you just said to Denny McClain in the exchange you two had, you have now officially entered his class in life? An old man. Why, in my day, things were so much better. Hey, the pitching's terrible today. It was so much
He's
better.
He's still 165-pound rookie.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, we're always going to think that our era is better. I think that's just part of
Rainer,
life.
Of course.
But I don't want to disrespect the players today because, again, if you were a good player back then, you could have played now and vice versa. Yeah. They could have played then. And you know, I think you would just adjust to the times. You know, again, all sports, as I mentioned, bigger, stronger, faster. Yeah. That is true. And I don't want to just start getting into this. Yep. You know, we were so much better.
Right.
We knew how to play baseball maybe a little bit better.
Absolutely.
We learned how to improvise.
Right.
But physically, they're better.
Yeah.
So speaking of the olden days as we are, I called you at your house one time many years ago. I don't know why. I set up an interview with you, something we were doing. Your wife answers the phone. I said, hey, is Alan available right now? She says, no, I haven't called you, Bob. He's out in the backyard mowing the lawn.
Oh, yeah.
You're living in basically a working class suburb of Detroit, Redford.
Yeah.
You're mowing your own lawn. At that age, when this happened, how much money do you think you would have been making now in current Major League Baseball?
Not fair.
Well, I think you probably could answer that better. I don't know. But you know what? And again, I'm going to try to play this off a little bit. But here's the key. You know, during my years, I was basically at the top end, top third of my position. So I think that's the only way you can look at it. I mean, obviously, I would have been making more. We all would have been making more. Denny, just think, after winning 31 games, and if he had to go to arbitration or if he was a free agent, you know, he'd be like Garrett Cole right now.
Well, but I'd be negotiating for the chairmanship.
You would have been asking for a piece of the pie.
And, that's right.
And who knows what the numbers would have been, but obviously it would have been just substantial more.
Yeah, you got $60,000 the next year for having won 31 games.
Yeah, so, you know what? Lou and I actually were the first Tigers to go to arbitration.
Really?
And we, the club offered, going into the 1980 season, they offered 105 and we wanted 130. It was a $25,000 difference.
Oh my
and
God.
We both won.
Hey, we had Pete Rose on a couple of weeks ago. And we asked him, you know, who was the best manager you ever played for? And he said, Sparky. And he said, Sparky, there were three things Sparky would do. He'd either pat you on the back, kick you in the butt, or leave you alone. And he said, Pete said, he was a leave alone guy. Now, Sparky once told me that Lou was a leave alone guy. So my question, what were you? Were you a pat on the back or a kick in the butt guy for Sparky?
Well, I think it was the pat on the back and kick in the butt. But Sparky and I mean, he had a special relationship with a lot of us. There's no question. I mean, Gibby for one was one. Jack was another one. And so was I and Lou. But Lou was one that he did a lot more. You know, he was quiet, but he was observant. But you didn't need to kick him in the butt. He found out that you just kind of let him do his thing. Now, Lou was watching us, and he was a very talented young man. But it was just one of the things. That's what makes a great manager, is learning your personalities. And there was none better than Sparky. There was none better. He knew when to push and how to push the right button for all of us. But he used to take me in and try to coach me, or that's not really the right word. He knew that I was a sponge, so he tried to give me as much of behind the scenes and trying those kinds of things to help me in my career, which I'm very thankful that he did. But I did have one of the special relationships with Sparky as well.
Did you ever have an argument with him?
No, I don't. Denny, I really did. I was very respectful. Again, first thing, when he came to us, he was coming from the Big Red Machine. And I, as Eli alluded to, I was a sports junkie already. I was very respectful, knew what he had accomplished with them. And I was like in awe. And so when Sparky spoke, I listened. And I did not have, the one time I would disagree with him, he made a comment about pain don't hurt. Well, I ended up hurting my arm, and he didn't realize that I needed to get my shoulder scoped at the end of the World Series. Dr. Andrews, who's still doing surgeries today, I was one of his early patients. But he made a comment about pain don't hurt. You know, he was trying to toughen me up and get me through it. But my arm was seriously, I was hurt. And so, you know, one of the things that I remember that kind of digged at me that, you know, I wanted to prove him wrong, but my arm was bothering me. What could I do?
Talking about Tram, because we all go back so many, many years together. We've been so kind to you so far. Now it gets a little tougher. What the devil is wrong with this god-awful excuse for a Major League Baseball team
please,
in Detroit?
Please, Bob.
Well,
that's so
it's
harsh.
You know what? It's painful. I'm not going to try to deny that, but I'm trying to, you know, at least look at it. Like, you know, Denny said, it wasn't quite that bad when he came up in the early 60s. But it's similar to what we had, you know, in the early 2000s when we totally revamped it. And that's kind of what we've done. The only problem, and again, this could change. You know, you never know. Opportunity is there for some of these young players.
Yeah.
We're looking for guys like Lou and I and Jack and Lance and Gibby and that group and Dave Rosema and others to step up. Tommy Brook and Dan Petrie. I'm missing a bunch. I don't want to. But you get the drift. We need some of these kids to step up. There's an opportunity for them. Hey, sometimes opportunity's not there. It's there for these kids to take and run with it for years. It's a great place to play. Unfortunately, we haven't had somebody do that yet. But I'm not losing faith. There's still some good kids. And I do think there's a few of them there that are going to be good major league players.
We had the Rupert
Jones. To your point, Bob, you know, we're not very good right now.
Wait, really? I haven't noticed.
Well, okay. So, in your job though, you are traveling to minor leagues and you're looking at guys. So who maybe that's off the radar? Do you maybe earmark and say this kid you might be seeing him in a few years because I like what I see. Anybody
well,
like
the
that?
The pitching is what we have. That there's some names that I think are like one. I mean, the Casey Mize and Matt Manning. Those, you know, everybody hears about them. But the Tarek Skubal, who I believe, you know, kind of the last couple months, he got up to Double A, and that wasn't the household name. He was a ninth round pick, just a 2018. A good size, 6'4", you know, 220, good arm, left hander that I think is in that mix with Casey and Matt. And I do believe that he'll be pitching in the big leagues within a year or so. I mean, that's how talented he's moved up the. He's moved up the chain quite quickly. The position players, Daz Cameron, I still think is our best, you know, as far as the position player, center field, outfielder. I'm not sure if he's a center fielder in the major leagues, but we'll see. He did not have a very good year, guys. I can't defend that part, but he's still a talented young man that I have not lost. I'm not off him yet. I still think he's going to be a major league player.
You know what,
his
Alan?
Dad was a good one, so he's got some genes.
Alan, you know what? You really sound like an organization man.
Yes. There you go.
You said that, Danny.
I mean, Alan.
Well, I still, you know, the 1st and the 15th, I still, you know, get that.
Oh, listen, I love you for saying that, too.
Listen, I want to, we haven't talked about the 84 season, and by the way, the name of my title of my book was 84, The Last of the Great Tigers, and you still are the last of the great Tigers. We had Rupert Jones on. I did some research, and I forget a lot of 84, even though I was there every day, and I'm researching him, and I go, I realized that when they called him up,
getting old, Eli.
When they called him up June 5th, they cut Rod Allen and brought him up. I'd forgotten. After you guys went 35-5, you see, people think, well, they went 35-5. They just cruised to the championship. There was no sweat. You guys lost 8 of your next 12 games, and Toronto won 2 games here. They were within 3.5 games in early June when Rupert hit a couple of homers, and you kind of pulled away for a while after that. It got close again in September. Do people forget? They kind of think you guys just cruised to it, but there were some moments where you were worried, because if you didn't follow through and Jays caught you, it would have been hugely embarrassing.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Sparky, and that's another topic. My thought was, along with Rupert coming up and being a big contributor, but a Monday night game, Dave Bergman had, he had the most, the best at bat that any of us had all year. And I know people are going to go, what are you talking about? Well, just as you mentioned, there was a 3.5 game lead at the time. And Bergy in the 11th inning, it was extra innings, he had a 13-pitch at bat and ended up hitting a 3-run walk-off home run.
God.
And that, you know, again, a two-game swing, and we got
against Roy Lee Howell, right?
Yeah, against
Roy Lee Jackson.
Roy Lee Jackson, that was his name.
But
yeah,
Alan, here you go, Alan. I'm going to test you because you're younger than me. There was another 3-run homer earlier in that game. Do you remember who hit it?
Well, I was going to say Howard Johnson.
Yes! Very good. Very good. Because Howard wasn't there. Oh, very good.
But
good.
Howard Johnson was on that team, but he didn't get a whole lot of playing time and all that good stuff. But we ended up, having a fine career. But no, I wanted to, the other point I wanted to make about that year and how sparking the coaching staff, being where I've now been retired for years, been a manager, been a coach, understanding that part of it, that, you know, once you don't, you're not suiting up, you really don't have a whole lot to do with it. You prepare them, and then you got to, you know, let them play. Sparky always said that if we wouldn't have won it, it would have been most one of the most difficult, or the most difficult for that fact. Everybody would have forgotten the 35-5 start and all the great things that we did. Well, fortunately, we capped it off. But I didn't realize that. We were just playing. You know, Denny knows you're playing. You're not worried about stuff like that, man. We were confident.
That's right.
But you need to be confident. I mean, what the heck? You know, we're off to a great start. We got all the confidence in the world. Let's go. Bring them on. Bring the world on. And that's how we felt that year, I'm sure, just like they felt in 68.
Sure. Now, another thing people forget about 84 is that although Jack started 10-1, he went through a really bad, he had an elbow problem, went through a really bad stretch, and he stopped talking to the press. He stopped talking to Roger Craig, and he stopped talking to you guys. And about 5 years ago, your beloved ex-teammate Dave Bergman, who was dying of bile duct cancer and still raising money for the Joe Negro Foundation. So we're on the stage at the Motor City Casino, and I got 368 Tigers. I got, I think, Lolich, K-Line, and I forget who else. And I got you, Lou, and I think Rosie there. And I say to Jack, this is in front of this huge audience, I go, Jack, you know, you were kind of out of sorts there in 1984, and you weren't talking to people. You were really, really in a bad way. And I said, you know, do you remember that? And what are your thoughts? And his jaw starts to tremble a little bit.
Yeah.
And you're sitting next to him, and Jack says, you know, I should have said this a long time ago, and I'm sorry that I didn't. But these two guys, he looked at you and Lou, and you stopped smiling when he looked at you because you were laughing. He goes, I just want to say, and I should have said a lot earlier, how much I really appreciated playing with those guys and how sorry I am that I, you know, that I acted the way I did at times. You remember that? And talk about it a little bit.
I certainly do, Eli. And the fact that Jack, you know, he wears his emotions on his sleeve, like there's a lot of guys, but he was one of them. And he always was apologetic after the fact, but he had a quick fuse. And he said a few things that I'm sure he would like to take back, but that's not how life works. But he was a great teammate. He really was. We loved him, even though, you know, we called him, you know, Mount Morris erupts and all this good stuff. He had a big heart. And you know what? He's broke down quite a few times over the years at events, and just kind of along the same lines. That, you know, some things just, you know, you think back and say, you know what, shake your head and say, why in the hell did I do something like that? But that's how it works.
It was nice because he was emotional. He regretted it. And I'm thinking to myself, is Jack Morris going to cry on stage here?
Yeah.
It's actually very, very poignant.
I've seen him when he went to the Hall of Fame. He broke down when we were announced at the winter meetings in 2018, and Robin Yount and George Brett were there. And they had a little bet going, you know, with how quickly he was going to break down during his speech. And he almost broke down when he was talking about his dad and his family, but he didn't. But that's Jack. Again, he's an emotional guy, and we love him for it. You know, that's just how he is.
You know, and I think about one or two decisions in my life I regret making. I had one or two.
Well, I'd say so.
I feel a few more than that, probably.
Hey, Tram,
few
pretty costly last, ones.
Tram, here's the last one from me. Yeah. I know we got to let you go at some point soon. Yeah. This is a critical issue that we have not broached with you, and it comes courtesy of listener C. Michael Raymond, get this, at 1984 WS Champs. He writes, please ask Tram about being on Magnum P.I.
Oh, man. Wow. What great acting Lou and I did.
That was 83, that's right.
I get some comments every year. There's a half a dozen times. I'm not part of the Screen Actors Guild anymore, but Lou and I, to be on that, we had to. And so I used to get, for years, two checks for like $39.50.
Royalties!
Oh, man, I wasn't going to get rich on that. But the fact that Tom Selleck was a huge Tiger fan, yeah, still is. That was the reason. We had a gentleman by the name of Rick Brode, who was
my agent at one time, and Eli's agent.
Mine too. Mine too.
Exactly.
Mine too.
Exactly.
He ripped all of us off.
He wrote a letter to the producer, and he told me that, and I just kind of blew it off like, come on, man, they're not.
Yeah.
They got back and said, we'd love to have you. And
That's
so Lou and I flew out to Hawaii. It was on Diamond Head in Honolulu there, outside of Honolulu. And we spent a couple of days. Tom was off doing some movie. And so we ended up staying, you know, I don't know, a few extra days. But just the fact of doing and just being a part of that, obviously we're not actors, but they made us feel right at home. They made us feel welcome. And we had three lines apiece, and we weren't very good, but the fact of the matter is it was pretty cool.
last question for you. You see any of the guys now besides at these get-togethers?
I mean, he works with Gibby and Lance.
Well, I'm not talking about the obvious.
Oh.
Well, you know, I don't see them often, but I'm sure like yourself, when you get to go to a reunion, it might be 5 or 10 years or at least a few years. It's like old hat. I mean, the fraternity, the bond that we have will never lose. And obviously being in Detroit, I get to see Dan Petrie and Jack and you know, Lance now that he's in a special assistant. I've seen him over the years, which is always, you know, my oldest son is named Lance.
Right. So that's, I'll be darned.
I think that tells you what I think about Lance. Of course, Gibby.
Not Denny, huh? You didn't name him Denny, huh?
I didn't. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Bill. You hurt me real bad.
I'm not having any more kids, I can tell you that. But no, it's that fraternity, like I said, is very special that we have. That, you know, again, just to see everybody. And as we get older, I get a little more sentimental. Like, hey, you never know when's the last, you know, this might be the last time you see each other.
That's,
I mean,
right,
we're all day-to-day now, guys. We know that.
Yeah.
Hey, since Denny mentioned this, Tram, I know I said it was my last question, but I solve a great mystery for everybody. What happened to your friend, fellow California native, and teammate Marty Castillo? Like, he's never
been
heard
from
again.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
He's like he fell off the map. I can't answer that. I don't know. He hasn't been to any of the reunions.
Yeah.
I thought I heard he was in Florida, but I'm not 100% on that as well. I don't know what happened. I'd love to see him.
I talked to Wilcox about that at an outing this summer, and he thinks Marty's had a lot of trouble. I think he was in jail for a while. I'm not exactly sure what for.
Ouch.
But
that's not good.
That's really sad because he was just so much fun. What a great guy. How much fun it was.
No, he was very instrumental in that World Series as well. I mean, he got the playing time mostly at third base in the World Series that I think a lot of people forget. I mean, Tommy Brookins kind of the one of our unsung heroes, didn't get to play much in the World Series. We mentioned Hojo, but Hojo didn't play much in the World Series, if at all.
I don't think he did at all.
You know, it's just you know, it's one of those things. But we'd love to see him. I wish he would. If he's listening or he hears this podcast, Marty, come on out, man.
Yeah.
We'd like to see you.
Alan, thanks so much for joining us. A lot of fun. Really appreciate it. Best of luck in your future with the Tigers, and I really hope that we see you and Lou together. That'll be a great story and well-deserved for
Alan,
him.
You've been great. Well, thanks. You very much.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Tram.
Right,
great to talk to you again.
It. Again, I'm just going to end on that. You know, let's pull for Lou, man. That would be awesome.
Yep.
Another Tiger in Cooperstown, and he's very deserving.
Thank you. All Have right. a great day.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
You know, that
He really is an organization man now,
yeah,
isn't
that's
he?
Good for him. Yeah, he always has been. He says the right things.
You're right. He has been kind of an organization man. And as far as Hojo, you know, I forgot he didn't play in the World Series.
No, no.
And he was a good player.
They traded him in the offseason. I think he went to the Mets.
To the Mets. He went to the Mets. That's exactly where he went. And boy, but he could play.
Yeah, I love Hojo. Here's my quick Hojo story, okay? So I go to New York. Also in 1986, I think he went in 85, and Hojo wasn't playing much because Ray Knight was the third baseman, Hojo backed him up.
Yeah.
They got rid of Knight after that year, and then Hojo had some really good years there.
He sure did.
Mets. But every night I was on Channel 7, and ABC had the World Series game, so right after the game, the moment the game ended, I have to have an interview right away, and I try and get Doc Gooden, but every game, Hojo waited on the top step of the dugout in case I couldn't get a big name guest who was going to be there for me.
Is that right?
No, I got it every time, and he'd see I had Dyke Gooden, and I'd kind of give him a little signal he gave me. It was really, really nice of him.
That's very nice. And you know what? One other thing was real obvious. Tram's living a good life, and he playing golf in Vegas last week and San Diego this week.
He was a hell of a basketball player too.
Yes,
you know, he's always been a great
athlete.
Eli, I'll just back you up with one other little thing here. So Cameron tells me 100 years ago, hey, you know what? There's this top kid the Tigers have from AAA Evansville. It's going to be a star. He's staying with me. You want to come over and meet him? I said, well, who is it? He tells me, I guess. So I stop by Cameron's house, and from the back out walks this guy, muscular guy, wearing only a pair of white jockey underpants. And that was the first time I ever met Howard Johnson.
the other thing, too, he gave us a little hope with this 6'4" left-hander, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh? Wouldn't that be nice to have three guys like that? And you know the other fact? It's been 35 years.
Yeah, it's about time.
God, does it fly, huh?
Anyway, thanks for joining us today. We will see you again on Monday for another edition of No Filter Sports.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
By the way, everybody, I'm going to be in Muskegon, Michigan this weekend, Saturday, and I want to let you know the big charity thing up there, and Dave Rosma and some of the other 84 Tigers are going to be up there. So if you get a chance, come on out to the VFW in Muskegon. It's going to be a great show.
So long, everybody.